Well, good afternoon, good morning, welcome back, good evening, wherever you are. This is our session 5 of the 5th WordPress Dev Camp. In today's session, we're going to be focusing all on optimization and enhancement of speed, and basically the preparation information that is required for our site to be ready to go. And it also will talk about some handoff things that may be required. Because it's amazing how many more of you are either getting subcontracted to build certain parts of a website or to build the website and then hand it off to another group who is going to then manage it, or you're developing a certain thing. So there are some things that we should do before we hand over the reins to somebody else. But to get started, we are going to be talking about how to get a faster web page. Now, in our default, you know, site that we've been playing around with today, this is going to be pretty fast already. Even without doing anything, you're probably going to hit 90 or more. Now, this is not using the original Voce theme, which basically you could just install it and you would hit 95 or something. It's extremely optimized. Voce 2, there's a little more to the theme, and so therefore we have to do a little bit more. But even just default stuff, you saw, I think it was on Wednesday when I ran that page speed in SEO Studio, we weren't doing anything other than just running basic things. There was no caching, there was no nothing, and it was still getting 90 on basically just the theme itself. So that's always a good thing. So in today's world, there are multiple things that go into speeding up a WordPress site, whether it's your own or your client's sites. And I'm going to go through a number of them. So the first thing is, I know this sounds silly, but not all hosts are created equal. The web provider, your web host, is a major factor in speed. You could do all the settings of adding caching plugins and offloading to CDNs and minifying CSS and JavaScript and gzip compression and image size. You could do everything, but if you're on a poor host, it doesn't matter. Now, why is that an issue? I'm going to use a quick little illustration here. We're going to come over here to our little test thing. So let's say you're on your own site, your own server. So we have one server. Yay. And we've got blah, blah, blah. This is the line that points to the number of files or information that needs bandwidth to send to somebody who visits our site. So we'll say this is our bandwidth need. All right, that makes sense. Well, if our visitor is down here and they're waiting to get all of these in order to view the item, if you're the only one on the server, and let's just say, and again, I'm oversimplifying this, so please accept that this is oversimplified. You might even be able to use this to talk to clients, but this is not something you'll use to explain to a shared hosting environment why they are dumb, because they'll just look at us and say, well, that's a dumb illustration, and you won't get anywhere with your shared hosting. We've all heard of, and I'm just going to call it multi-threading. In the server environment, it's slightly different because it has number of processes that can be run at a time. So you can think to yourself, well, how many times can PHP query something, or how many scripts can be running? How long can that script be running or that code be querying something in the database before we have to stop it automatically by the server? But let's just say there's multi-threading. And I'm using the illustration of, okay, these are let's say our server has the ability to do multi-threads four times, or four multi-threads, which means this one can go here, 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 and this one, oh, we've got to wait till this one finishes or one of the other doorways finishes before this final piece goes through to the visitor. That's only if there is one person. Now let's say you're on a server with 700 other people. They all have five items. That server still only has four doorways to serve 700 visitors all wanting to do. So basically, you're going to get a stacked queue of information that needs to be passed from the server to the visitor. Now, what normally will happen on quality hosts, you will have hosts that manage these type of queues differently, are able to cache processes, are able to already know if we have sent this exact same request, and so therefore we don't have to mess with the server. We can just put it in the fast lane to go to that visitor. We'll have servers that have a lot more RAM, so it can run a lot more processes, or it will have a larger CPU, so it can run multiple things at the same time. It'll have a faster internet connection, so it can process the data through the doorways that all the visitors must get to. So in this oversimplification, we can easily see that I always like to think about it as Washington, D.C. traffic is how I used to explain it to customers that I would build sites for. If you've never driven in Washington, D.C., on a Sunday morning, a certain route, let's just say we're going from Annandale into Southwest DC to the baseball stadium. Certain routes, if there's no baseball game going, there's no nothing else, I can just hop on 395, go over the bridge into DC, zero traffic, and we can do it in about 16 minutes. Let's change it. All right, let's say for some reason there's going to be a parade for the Washington Nationals for winning the World Series on a Thursday morning during rush hour, that exact same highway and bridge, I would be surprised if I could pull it off in 2 hours. Traffic can get so bad because there's a limited number of roadways. And the more people who get on the roadway, the more it gets clogged. Exactly the same for servers. So, may sound simple, but not all hosts are created equal. Shared hosting, stay away from, because that is basically that's Los Angeles, New York City, and Washington, D.C., and Atlanta with horrible traffic planning. A newer city probably has less of an issue. They've already thought through the some of the highways, the HOV lanes, the fast lanes, the way they redirect traffic through areas. Those are the better web hosts. They're already handling the traffic. So I put this out there is like, if you do everything you're trying to do, everything we talk about today, and it's still not improving, it's going to be probably 98% of the time it is because of the host that you're on. I will also say, just because one host is great in one situation, many of these hosts, they have tons and tons of servers. You may be on a bad server on a good host. So if you've done everything, but you like the host company you're with, try and see if they can move you to a different server. And sometimes it's as simple as, you know, hey, we've done everything we can to optimize. We're still not seeing this. I'm wondering if you actually have some other clients who are using more resources than are necessary, which is slowing me down. All right. So yes, cheap hosting is like sitting in rush hour traffic. Nobody likes it. Second thing, the choice of your WordPress theme. It may appear simple, but not all themes are created equal. If a theme claims to do everything, run away. Because that's not what the theme is there for. The theme is there to display content in a way that, hey, we're getting stuff out of the database and we are displaying it to the visitor. And we're displaying it in a specific area. Or in a specific method or in a specific order. If that theme also is, you know what, I'm also going to do all your SEO work, and then I'm also going to provide a video broadcast booth inside here. And then, you know, we're going to include 11 billion icons so that you could just put icons everywhere. And a slider. Sure, Stacy. If that's what the theme is doing, I like to think about it in the theater world. You have that fourth wall, or do they call it the third wall or the fifth wall? I don't know what wall it is. Basically, if you're on stage, you're not supposed to talk directly to the people in the audience, because that's not what it's breaking the concept of the illusion that this thing is actually occurring on stage. And I'm going to just put it this way. WordPress is unique in that it built a really robust API system for plugins to do things, to function properly, to enqueue scripts, to handle advanced functionality of interacting with WordPress core. That's not true for the theme API. There's specific things the theme does to deal with the loop and the query and the database, but not the other stuff. So your choice of your WordPress theme is important. With that being said, there are some themes that offer tons of functionality. But if you look a little bit closer, you're like, oh, I see. For example, GeneratePress. You have the theme that has all these kitchen sink type things. But guess what? Those kitchen sink aspects are in a plugin that is a companion to the theme. Because it understands that the functionality is better optimized in a plugin. That's just one example. And Mike, yes, I try to do that for almost all of our work, the work we do with plugins. I don't always get the on-off switch in all the places, but you see with SEO Studio, you can turn off the parts that you don't want. In other plugins, in Control Studio, you can turn on and off and use certain things, and they never load unless you turn them on. The only time they actually load when they're turned off is in the admin area on that specific page. If your themes do that, all right, I can agree with that. But if your theme basically tells you, If you use this theme, you will not need to use 48 other plugins. Well, you've just created a monster with that. And the final thing I'll say about themes for optimization, you will, over the course and life of a site, rebuild a theme. 9 times out of 10, you're not going to rebuild the plugin, the functionality. And so therefore, if you know in the future you are going to be rebuilding, redesigning sites, that's just, you got to update the look and the feel. Why leave functionality in something that you know will have to change, and therefore it's going to waste your time? Because now, oh, if I'm going to change the theme, I have to look for replacements for the functionality that this theme did. All right. So web provider, choice of the WordPress theme, image size. WordPress allows you to upload gigantic media files. Isn't that great? It's so awesome because clients never take advantage of this benefit of uploading 58 gigabyte, 5 billion pixel images, and they wonder why it takes forever to load the homepage. Oh, but I just got this brand new SLR super high density camera, and I'm going to use it to post images every morning because it'll auto upload for me. Yeah. The number one thing a client can do to slow down a website is to upload gigantic images. So therefore, there have to be methods for us to either auto-optimize or not allow the client to mess with that. Or we make sure that all images get optimized before they get uploaded. Now, I also have, there's several things that you can do. We're going to talk a little bit more about images in just in another moment or so. But I want to grab my link here that I was going to share with you. We've all heard about things like WP Smush and EWWW Image Optimizer. But they're really, and I think I've shared this before. How many of your clients have never touched a photo editor plugin? Not plugin, an actual app. Like if you were to say, oh, just use Photoshop or GIMP or something to, or just this image editor to change the resolution before you update them. If that's the thing and you are, and the clients are like, you know what? I can be a good client and I will try and upload, because I'm going to write my blog posts, but I want to include an image, but I want to do it the right way. What I always tell them, now that Google released something called Squoosh, or however you pronounce this, Squoosh, I just have them bookmark this. Why? Because they can simply drag the image that they want to upload here. Let's just say, oh, we're dragging an image, 2.8 megs. They drag it on here, and then all they have to do is, yeah, let's just, let's make sure we turn it into a PNG. Wait. Oh, no. It's got bigger. So this is a helpful way that they're like, oh, that's not what I want. So let's go to the original image, and they'll, basically, it's going to tell them, oh, you've gone too big, you've gone too small. By default, it automatically gives you a good quality image. A lot of clients will be like, well, I want to make sure that my super awesome SLR camera didn't mess up anything. Well, look at this. A two, almost a 3 megabyte file is down to 859, 69% smaller. And can that client see any difference? Like, look at the eye. There is no difference. So this hopefully would encourage them to then, I can now download the smaller image and I can then upload that image. So Squoosh is very easy to use, drag and drop, download it. Now, it doesn't have to be for your clients. It can be for you. You can simply have this in a browser window, bomb. Doesn't matter. You don't have to be at your desktop computer. You can do use this on a mobile device and just squish whatever image you want. Grab the image and you're done. No real optimization that you need. And yes, there is some type of, we can do lots and lots of resizing, reduce the palette. Like even if I reduced it like this, I've removed colors and I'm still getting fairly high quality. Now, we can keep going and it's going to update here. It's going to look very different because I've dropped the quality to like 17%. You've got to wait for it to finish working. It may not actually look like a good picture at all. I'm actually curious to see how much I destroyed it. Well, now you see it's pixelated. But it depends on how big you're making it. How big the image is. So have fun with Squoosh. Makes it easy. I think it's an easy thing for clients to use. That is prior to uploading. Now, when we get into the auto-optimized plugin, I'm going to show you another integration that does automatic whatever is uploaded. There's tools that we can have that's going to automatically handle our files. This brings us to the next thing, CSS and JavaScript. If you are looking at a style sheet, let's go to an actual parent theme because that's a larger style sheet. Okay. Let me just show style. Okay. So here is a regular style sheet. It is a long style sheet for the Voce theme. I mean, it includes before, after, grayscaling, anti-alias. It's all sorts of stuff that it handles. It takes a while to deliver that to a browser because the browser must load every single line and read through it. Which is why we almost always deliver in the minified way. So what is going on? There's one line of code for the entire Voce style sheet. There is a second line of code, basically for the bootstrap layout stuff that comes with it. Two lines are much faster. And that's the other thing. Even though they're gigantic lines, browsers treat them and can just process them so much faster. We don't need all the white space issues. The same is true for JavaScript files. Now, we might be thinking, how much is really that going to change, or how much is really that going to affect our site? If you take a look at most WordPress websites, now this is not going to have much at all because it's just a very basic site. We've got everything loading from the admin bar CSS, the dash icon CSS, the admin bar CSS again, a font CSS file, as well as the theme CSS file that would be loading in here as well. And then we also have JavaScript files at the top. And if we have to go all the way down to the footer, we're going to get some additional JavaScript files. So because of that, even on default sites, we have lots and lots of files. The more plugins you use, the more times they enqueue JavaScripts, the more times they enqueue CSS files. This takes time to load. And this is where we will get into and we'll try and fix as well, something called render blocking scripts. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how PHP handles things. So let's say this is our special line of code, and we're going to pretend to be a computer that goes through this. So we would go, here's line one, A, B, C, D, E. In order for PHP to process this, it's going to start at the beginning and say A, B, C, D, E. It's going to do this in the perfect vertical order. But if on the B line that it ran into some if B is equal to muffin, we'll go ahead and continue. And if PHP goes A, B, I've got a question. I like questions. So let me check this. Oh, no, B is not muffin. Oh, so it's not. So I have to go to the end of this bracket. Oh, that's the end of the file. I'm done. So in PHP, it never reads CDE. It has no idea what that is because it didn't even touch it. It starts at the top, goes to the bottom. That's how PHP is done. HTML. All right. We start at the top and go A, B, C, D, E. We go all the way at the top, start, keep going down, keep going down, keep going down. If you had conditional logic, I mean, you don't really have conditional logic in HTML. So, but if you had the ability to do something like if B is greater than muffin, HTML simply just says, huh, okay, that's a good question. I like questions, but I want to know what else is there. C, D, E. HTML reads the entire file. This is important, and I know this is a rabbit trail we're going on. This is important because in order for JavaScript to work, there has to be a DOM that is built every time a web page is loaded. The DOM is the document object model. So basically, when a browser, remember JavaScript is run at the browser, not at the server. So when a browser reads the HTML document, it has instant recall, instant photo recall of the entire HTML page, the DOM. So when JavaScript starts asking questions like, hey, go to B and say, hey, everyone. Because JavaScript built a document object model, it knows, oh, I remember where B is because I can just jump to that point. So we went down this rabbit trail simply because HTML files. The same is true for if we did CSS files. Again, this is not actual code. Everything is read from the top to the bottom. Everything is recorded. Everything is remembered. Now, it's slightly different why CSS is remembered by the browser. And it kind of has to do with the DOM. But the reason why CSS remembers everything is because, what if we have this? Hover. Active. So we have additional types of pseudo classes in CSS which affect the element that we'd be here. Well, the browser has to remember the entire CSS file so that when somebody affects the DOM by hovering over an element, the browser remembers, okay, I remember you wrote something about how hover occurs, and so therefore I need to go remember the conditions or the instructions you had. So this whole little story time was simply trying to say the importance of minifying CSS and JavaScript and HTML will increase the speed, because if we can deliver those files that must be read in completeness, if we can give it to them faster, they can then render the whole page with all the actions, with all the elements that are working. This is also why you cannot minify PHP. PHP doesn't have to read everything. It only reads the instructions that are based on conditions. I hope that makes sense, and I hope maybe explaining it in this way can at least give some indication about why we need to minify and what things we don't want to minify or even attempt to squash. Optimization of PHP is simply in the optimization of the functions of how much server process are we using? Are we repeating ourselves? The minifications in CSS, JavaScript, and HTML is simply deliver everything for a computer to read, because the computer does not need space. Marianne, some browsers actually do, some of the tiny little test browsers. Some browsers say, we're going to basically run it through a minification process and store it. And there is a push within both Mozilla Foundation that a browser would cache minified versions of a file, not the full file. All right. So that's side question there. The other thing we can do, and again, we're gonna dive into some of this when we use plugins. So in the second half of today, when we work with the plugins, we're gonna kind of recap a few of the things that we've just been talking about. So we also have caching. It may appear simple, but not all bandwidth is created equal. If we have to deliver a lot of content, the bandwidth from my server, even if I have a DigitalOcean installation or my own dedicated server, is never going to be as fast and as optimized as somebody who builds servers that are solely there to serve up images fast. A content distribution network. Somebody that says, you know what, we have 58 different server farms around the world, and when you go visit your little server, and you've offloaded all your images to our content management system, content distributed network, we will figure out your visitor, which server farm they're closest to, and we will deliver those images rather than, you know, if you have somebody visiting from Japan, we are going to deliver from our Singapore server rather than deliver from our Argentinian, Southern Peru or Guatemala or, you know, some South American server farm. Because it does take time. Eventually, in the near future, when we have 50 bazillion satellites all sharing the internet, we probably won't need content distributed stuff, we'll just be able to easily send information everywhere. But here's the other thing. Remember, there are some places in this world that still rely on cables, internet cables, that are under the ocean. There's only so much that if I have to download an image that is on a server halfway around the world, it's going to take longer to get to me. Because just distance, there is actually something in distance on bandwidth. All right. Same thing for CDNs. If you're looking at the handout, we're getting to the third page or something. We will also see GZIP compression. I'm sure you guys have seen this before all the time. GZIP compression is the server's farm's method of delivering things faster. So basically what it does is when somebody comes to visit my site, if I have GZIP compression, everything that I GZIP up, like HTML files, XML files, CSS files, JavaScript files, RSS, XML things, whatever we're zipping up, the actual server to browser is not getting the full-blown HTML page. The server is literally zipping and compressing your HTML page, your XML thing, your CSS. It's compressing those files that it can squash down to nothing to deliver that to your browser, your visitors' browsers. And then the browser unwraps the present every single page it goes to. So there is a handoff that happens. So when GZIP is able to be enabled on a server, the delivery time of content from server to browser is increased. Is decreased because it can happen really fast. All right. I'm going to quick run through these other things, and then we're going to dive into the plugin because we need to start putting some of these things into practice. So before we leave, the other things that we have to deal with, and we will also roll back around with our plugins, you need to keep the database clean in your WordPress site. Remember that every single time there is an autosave or a temporary save of a post, that's all going into the database. Every single time you start a draft or edit something, that's something that goes into the database. Every single time you install a plugin, uninstall a plugin, there are entries being entered into the database. Because of this, we need to keep it clean. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have a gigantic size database. It all depends on the type of site. If you have lots of content, you're going to have a very large database. And at the same time, keep the plugin area clean. There really is almost no reason for a plugin to exist in a WordPress site that is not activated. If you are not using the plugin, take it off. A, that's a security thing. And then, not only make sure you are only using plugins or have plugins installed, ask yourself, do I really need something like this? Am I using something? Now, these are some just bare basic stuff, but what about if you have let's have an entire plugin that posts to Facebook. Do you really need a plugin to do that, or can you offload it like through Zapier or IFTTT and have an external service that is not, we're not communicating, we're not loading everything. Basically, it's just watching your site so that when you actually make a blog post, it takes the content and auto posts it to a social network or something. We want to constantly be thinking, is there a reason I'm using this plugin? If you can answer that for every one of your plugins, that's fine. If that answer is simply, it makes my life easier to handle my client, that's a valid reason. It's not all, I must get to the bare bones because I have to. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of plugins that do specific functions. But if it is simply because, well, we want these functions in the future, or I like the idea, only have plugins, only have systems on your website that actually work. I like to think about it like most of us probably have a lot of electronics or things that get plugged in our homes. How many of you try to keep on track of when you are recharging things, and once it's recharged, you unplug it? We probably do that for several purposes. One, once it's fully charged, it doesn't need to stay plugged in. We don't want a battery issue in the future. Doesn't mean you will get a battery issue, but some things don't handle constant flow of electricity loading on the battery. But it also means if we unplug things, we're no longer using the electricity, and if your electricity is metered, you don't have to pay for it. Now, this is minuscule, but even if you leave charging cables plugged into the wall, like you have a computer brick that you plug your computer into, if that brick, the charging brick, stays connected to the wall, there's still a little bit of charge going there. The same is true for plugins. Do we really want a plugin active on our site that is not really there? It's there every once in a while. We might use it. You know, there's other things you can do. You can create a folder on your desktop or your computer, or you just have a list of plugins that you know exactly what they are. And you can just simply add them and subtract, deactivate them or delete them when you don't need them and when you do need them. Sarah, we'll get to that Cloudflare caching. Do we need a caching plugin? What should we be using when we do the plugins? Final two things before we take our break. Keeping external scripts to a minimum. Currently, one of the most the most sucker of data chunks is Facebook. You may think, I just have this little pixel in the corner to do tracking and to connect up Facebook. The amount of data that your site waits on to load from Facebook is ginormous just to have a listing of the friends that are part or a connection to the Facebook page. You really have to ask yourself, is the drop in my speed enough that I want a real-time look at my Facebook friends for my client's company page? Or is it something that you use images or you use something else that maybe it's not real time, but you update number of followers or something else? Why does it have to be dynamic? Or maybe it does. You've got to ask those questions. It's almost like we've got to analyze, where's my trade-off in terms of speed versus dynamic interactions? And then finally, which we'll do with the plugin, you got to turn off pingbacks and trackbacks. WordPress still comes with that, we need to make sure we turn them off. All right, so when we come back from our break, one of our things that we will be doing is, for some reason I thought that report was already here. I'm just gonna run that report again. Hopefully Google doesn't get upset because I think I've run that report a few times today. I think it's already there, so I should be able to, there we go. So when we come back, we'll be dealing with eliminating render blocking, JavaScript, browser caching, other things. Yes, we've got, lots of stuff minified. Now, some of these have nothing to do with auto-optimize and the other plugins we'll be doing. Some of that is because the Voce 2 theme already minifies your CSS. It already serves up minified JavaScript. But we'll take a look at this report, what it means for you. We will get into three different plugins that if you follow along with the proper way of checking certain things or removing certain things from WordPress, you will see an increase in the speed of your site. And at the end of the day, speed has two purposes. For your clients, understanding, or your clients, the client visitor's patience. And I've got some really cool statistics and a really cool tool I'll show you about when we come back from our break, about how quickly people lose interest in your site. And then we will also dive into basically the best of the best that's out there for little to no money to speed up your sites. All right, so it right now is 1:47. So we are gonna go on break. It'll be just 13 minutes, so we'll be back. We'll start up again at 2. Be back at 2 p.m. Does that work? And then we'll wrap up with the dev camp on the other half of the break. I will mute the mic, and I will be right back with you all. All right, we're about another minute or so to go. I checked outside. Yep, still raining. Not that I had to check outside. I have windows all around me on the boat, so. But I am broadcasting in kind of a little enclosed foamed area, so I don't think you guys can hear the rain. I was running a number of tests where the microphone is. So even though the rain is all over, I think I've solved the sound issue for a portable broadcast studio. So I'm just waiting for the 2 o'clock time to come around and watching the phone. And there it's 2 o'clock. So let me delete this little note. So this second part of today's session, we are going to be focusing on tools that, yes, you can go into the wp-config file. Yes, you can go into the htaccess file. Yes, you can go into your server setup and actually modify how PHP is run and what it does and what you can kind of customize. But what I wanted to do is basically spend a little bit of time going through different settings and different plugins that you should know about so that we can use this part of the video replay if anybody needs a which setting did he use or what did he do? You can go back and rewatch this. And I'm going to be jumping around to a number of plugins because there are a number of things that you need to know about that WordPress comes bundled with. Part of keeping a fast WordPress site is optimizing things that you do or you don't need. So with that being said, there's one area that most people nowadays no longer use. But you may not know that on every single file, basically every single page that loads, there's at least some file, some script, some request that takes up at least 2 kilobytes, sometimes more. And that is comments. There's so many people nowadays who build sites for clients that comments are no longer part of the WordPress environment. Because if nobody's going to comment, why put it out there? I think it's much better at a bottom of a post or something. If you're wanting to get your clients to go on social media, you have people, hey, post your comment over here or fill out this form and we'll get back to you. Rather than having public comment areas, what you will find is you could just come over here and there is a plugin that handles all of that for you to make sure that nothing ever gets loaded. And that is disable comments. Now, I'm going to show you something in Control Studio in just a moment. If you want the flexibility of loading comments on some things. Maybe you're writing a custom post type or you want to use regular post, but you want to make sure no comments load anywhere else. You want this plugin because this plugin gives you the flexibility of choosing when and where comments load. Now, I also, in Control Studio, there are a number of features in Control Studio that allow you to turn on and off elements in WordPress that are just major time sucks of code, of load time. And so I wanted to go through a number of things, and there are new things getting added. So currently, in terms of the disable area, I have started the whole process, and I'm going to tell you about a few of the things that are getting added to this. This, disabling the emoji support for WordPress, is amazing that it will save at least 16 kilobytes for every person who loads. Now, you may not be thinking that that's not much, basically 16 kilobytes. But if you add that with getting rid of jQuery Migrate, getting rid of dash icons, getting rid of the heartbeat, getting rid of visitor comments, all of a sudden we're getting into the hundreds to 200 to 500 kilobytes of space. And all of a sudden we start seeing speed increase by 5, 10% over what it was. So turning off emojis, what is this? This is actually JavaScript that loads at the top of every WordPress website. Let me just jump over here, because all you have to do is view page source and you're going to see emoji stuff. Load this whole JavaScript of emoji stuff. Now, what did I say about HTML and CSS and JavaScript files before the break? I said that browsers must read it from top to bottom, and it cannot stop, and it can't jump around. So what this means is, at the very top of a website, this emoji has to load before we even get to other JavaScripts. And basically, what you're also looking at is this whole thing is auto-optimized. So we have the plugin auto-optimized, and you'll see that the whole HTML, it's hard to read anymore because we got rid of all white space. A browser doesn't need white space. Humans do. So auto-optimize is delivering these pages, but still, the entire web page, the blog post, the content have to wait to render until this emoji JavaScript is read. It's fractions of a second. But if we don't need it, if we don't need to turn those stupid little faces into actual emojis, turn it off. And yes, Control Studio can do that. Whoops. I will just go back. Control Studio can easily handle that by turning it off in the advanced area. So basically, if you turn this off, click save, we've disabled it. If we go back and look at the source code, the emojis are gone. They don't load. Then, other things that are being added is the ability to turn off embedded objects. WordPress by default allows you to like copy, and now you may want that, but it allows you to copy and paste like the URL of a tweet, a URL of a Facebook, a URL of an Instagram post. And then WordPress will do its magic and render it in a stylized tweet, in a stylized Facebook post. That's embedded object also is like, I just have to paste in the URL of a YouTube video. And when people look at the front end, it will be already embedded. You can turn that off, and that saves at least one file request every single page. And that's another, 6 to 10 kilobytes. There's old versions of jQuery. And so there's going to be an embed check that will have come in the next version. A jQuery Migrate. jQuery Migrate comes, basically, old versions of WordPress had jQuery Migrate, which was a bridge between the current version of jQuery and old version of jQuery. It cost at least 10 kilobytes every single time a page was loaded. And even though it was dropped from WordPress in 2016, If you have a WordPress site that was installed prior to 2016, it's still loading jQuery Migrate. So you may want to test it, because you may actually have a theme or something that requires some type of a function that is in old jQuery, but you might not, and you could actually save some time. WordPress normally leaves dash icons only in the back end. Dash icons are the WordPress icon family, but some people like it on the front end. And so therefore, dash icon can get loaded on the front end. And the other thing that you may not know, how many of you have, let me ask this question, how many of you have a website or your client has a website where they have a lot of users who log in and then use the site as logged in users? Not a full membership site, but just they log in to make comments, or maybe it is a membership site. Any logged in user is going to, even on the front end, get dash icons loaded. Logged out users normally don't get dash icons loaded. But if you turn off dash icons, and again, there's a new line that's going to basically eliminate dash icons. That saves over 50 kilobytes every single time a page is loaded. There's also Heartbeat. The Heartbeat occurs in WordPress and is basically how the autosave occurs. Autosave used to be on like a weird little cron job thing, but there's now been an updated a number of years ago, but it still takes 6 to 10 kilobytes. If you remove XML RPC and pingbacks, now that's over in Security Studio to turn that stuff off. That's going to save the load of a line here, a line there in the HTML. The same is true if all of a sudden we start turning off the WordPress generator. So for example, on the front end, if we went through and we started hiding all of these are additional lines that don't actually have to be used to run the site. So these are all things from the manifest, which basically was discontinued in 2017, and this manifest is still being put out there. It has to do with the Windows Live Writer. The RSD, the really simple discovery, it never really caught on. Removing the short link tags. Why? These link tags here. Search engines don't care about them. WordPress developed this concept of a short link and then tried to push it out there as part of the header tag, but search engines don't care about it. They're able to handle everything from the title tags and the meta descriptions and kind of your SEO stuff. So why is it there? These are additional lines of code that must be read into the browser. RSS feeds. If you use RSS feeds, do you need the discovery links in the URL? You don't have to. You can turn off the RSS links, these feed links, and then you could write your own one, because basically, if you didn't know that, this is another thing. If you go to WP Dev Camp and just type feed right after it, you are going to get an RSS feed. You don't have to have the published in the header of every single one of your files. And if you didn't know that, you can add the word feed after everything. Like if we go to, let's go to category uncategorized. All right, here's the rendered. Add feed to the end of that. That is the category feed. So it doesn't take a lot of brain space to write your own button, your own link to, hey, you want to subscribe to the RSS feed? Here's the link. Because all we have to do is add feed to the back end. We don't need this link feed URL blah, blah, blah with every single one of the pages that load. The other one is the REST API. Now, this is a little more dangerous. If you know you do not use the REST API, there are ways of turning it off. It's not something that you really want to do for everything. And the block library. With all of these savings, you may not realize that by turning off all those things I just highlighted, we are eliminating over 17 lines of code, individual lines of code from every single HTML page in WordPress. We are saving at a minimum 200 kilobytes of bandwidth that was downloading. Let me jump back over to SEO Studio. So if we are saving 200 kilobytes, where's the thing? In HTML, I mean, see this? We just dropped the HTML stuff from not, we would have dropped if it was on every page, 900 to 700. Now, these are multi-fractions of a second. I mean, it's minuscule. But it's those type of just tiny tweaks that we can turn around and slowly, you know, they compound. We get to add things together. And little bit here, little bit here, little bit here means now we're really turning in and rendering everything really fast. Now I'm going to introduce you to the next big thing. It's going to come out, well, it's getting added as a checkbox to Control Studio. And it is, I think, a really cool, basically it's a tiny piece of JavaScript that watches your visitors. How many of you have ever heard of instant.page? Anybody heard of it? Basically, it's a really tiny script that sits there, and if I'm coming over, let's say I'm on my site, let's go to my site, let's go to WPDevCamp.com. So I'm sitting here on my site and I'm reading the item. When I hover over a post or a read more button, simply by hovering over this instant page, tiny little JavaScript extension, preloads or starts to preload the process for that page. Because think about this. It takes less than a second for me to click on this and start the process of going to the next page. But if all of a sudden we can chop off 200 milliseconds of load time, it's just tiny little pieces that it has nothing to do with caching, and it doesn't do anything unless the user interacts. So it's not just going to sit there and run server resources to try and load in. That's for anything that links to another location, an image, whatever the end location of any link or any anchor. It's watching that. External links too. It starts, like if I were to go to ESPN, just simply, oh, read more at ESPN. As if I'm hovering over this, and again, it's doing it in fractions of a second, it's going to start to preload that location. Why is that important? And then I told you I would share something with you. Amazon released some studies, and again, I would go to this instant page. You can click on these links. If you remove just 100 milliseconds of latency, you improve, or at least Amazon improved their sales by 1%. So if you don't see that information, click on that one. You're going to find a bunch of great videos and articles on increasing the speed. I would encourage you to rip some of this stuff off, repackage it, present it to some of your clients in the newsletter about how, you know, there's this new way of focusing on an increasing speed. Google says if you increase the wait time of anything by 500 milliseconds, basically your traffic drops in 20%. 500 we're half a second. Half a second drops 20% of your traffic. So if we can start dropping that, maybe we can keep some of our traffic. Walmart says that they also saw 1% increase in revenue by simply 100 milliseconds of latency. Mozilla, by shaving off 2.2 seconds of page load time, they increased their downloads by 15%. Yahoo, maybe if they had learned how to do this before, they wouldn't be dead. 400 milliseconds resulted in a 5 to 9% drop in traffic. That's what it is. Just-in-time preloading. You can read more about it. So this is going to be a checkbox. Do you want to use Instant Page? You do not have to learn how to load it. You can simply use it in Control Studio, and it's going to be step one of possibly the future Cache Studio. So by doing those type of things, and again, real preloading takes a lot of work because you have to figure out where they're going, what they're doing, how much is too much in terms of preload. Are we going to basically just overwhelm the server? And a good start is that instant page. If you want to start playing around with it, again, they do have their own WordPress plugin. You could do that, but basically all you'd also have to do is drop this snippet before the close of the body tag. So all this is doing is watching how people interact with the DOM, and it's preloading whatever is on the other end of that link. So you can actually play around with this right now, see if you see a slight increase in your study. This script should not be, the other thing is you can actually go into their GitHub and everything, so it's all open source. I do not believe they are tracking stuff. Now, watch this. This is the other thing that I want you to see. No, not like discuss. What I love about this page is there's so much that you could use, or you could build similar things to teach your clients. Because tell your client, hey, I want you to go click the button that says test your clicking speed. So they go over there, they hover click. Even though I did that pretty quick, I just rolled over and clicked. It was still 400 milliseconds from hover to click. So if basically the hover, it's already chopping off, it's already starting to load. So basically 100 milliseconds, it started to load for almost 300 milliseconds of wherever that link was going. That's how fast it is. So when we talk about how much time it takes, it's next to nothing. But in the grand scheme of speed and load, I think they've done some really cool stuff with this. And again, you can dive into the technical details and look about a lot of stuff. Everything is serverless, Cloudflare. You can download the latest version and run it yourself. There's a lot of other stuff you can do. So I just set the stage for that. Okay, in going through our ideas of, okay, so now we get this weird thing called render blocking JavaScript. That means there is a JavaScript that is stopping the rest of the page to load because it requires the browser to load the entire JavaScript. And then once it's loaded, it will go ahead and continue down the document. The best ways I've found to do this, yes, you can go full-blown caching plugin. If you get overly aggressive with making sure every single JavaScript file is deferred, or meaning deferred, it loads in the bottom of the page, or asynchronous means it allows the JavaScript to load alongside, there are some pieces of code, some JavaScript, that will not work because it must be, like, we have to load the JavaScript first before the document is loaded, or we have to make sure that the document is fully finished before that JavaScript begins. So there are some requirements on that. But the best way to start, before you go full-blown caching plugin, are two plugins that actually are now managed by the same person. And it is called Auto Optimize. And then the other plugin is Async JavaScript. These two plugins. Auto Optimize is one of the probably easiest optimization plugin. So in your settings area, I would install this on just about every single website I'd have that's going live for clients, because it plays really nice with lots of other caching plugins, but it also handles a number of things that make it super easy. And again, all the advanced settings are basically, you can show them. They are shown by default, but this is what you need to know. Do you want to basically minify JavaScript? Do you want to minify CSS? Do you want to minify the HTML code? By default, I would highlight check this one and this one. And then I would test this one. Because sometimes when you optimize HTML code and you shrink it, you may run into some issues. So test it. Now, you will see with the advanced options, you can do all sorts of things of aggregating all the JavaScript files into one file. So now, in order to deliver it to a browser, it's going to be, boom, just one file. We can exclude certain files, especially if you know that, let's say there's a payment JavaScript file that you don't want to touch. Go ahead and you put it in you put the location of that file in here, and it doesn't touch it. Same thing is true for CSS. We have a lot of options here. Most people who are using a caching plugin use a content distribution network, CDN. But if you're not going to use another caching plugin, you're just presenting a streamlined delivery of your content, and you still want to connect up to a CDN, you can do that as well, not needed for Cloudflare, when you're using Cloudflare CDN. There's a lot more in this. This is not something that you put here, really, unless you know what you're doing. And I know we need to do more webinars in the future on fully setting up CDNs, fully offloading your image files or your media libraries to some other server, and we'll be looking at some tools that will allow you to do that. But I also wanted to come over here. I did tell you that there would be an assist for images. And if you were on Slack earlier, you would have seen that Mike was sharing the Short Pixel is a tool that allows you, that basically can auto clean up your images. And if you use Auto Optimize here, you have an even greater capability because it will not only serve up your images basically on the fly, pre-compressed, pre-delivered as a WebP image format. Lazy load all the images that are on your site. There's a lot of stuff that is there. And Ben, you're right. There's a lot of servers that now have caching systems where auto-optimize is a great solution on WordPress that works alongside caching plugins. So working with this, again, there is a bit of a cost outlay to do this. But you can take a look about that. The other thing is, a lot of people say, well, I have, or my client has a plugin or a theme that has lots of Google fonts, or for some reason we're loading Google fonts all over the place. Auto-optimize has the ability to basically overwrite anybody loading a whole bunch of Google fonts. We can remove all Google fonts from being loaded. It searches all the enqueue stuff and just basically dequeues anything that is trying to load lots of fonts. And there's a number of other options here. What I would suggest, if you are curious about really pushing forward with optimizing to the nth degree, check one of the boxes, see what it does, test it out. If everything works, then you can come back to the setting. Try an additional setting. Do not do this with any caching or optimization plugin. Don't just go in there and click all the checks because, oh, that'd be awesome, and then save. You may actually not be able to get back into your site. Bit by bit. Take it at time. It's going to take you some time to figure out what works best for your server. But if you follow these, there's lots of helps. The development that's been done around auto-optimize really makes it play with most servers and most other caching plugins. Then there is async JavaScript. Async JavaScript has this really cool wizard. The wizard has you connect up to GT Metrics and it runs a test. It's all free. You do have to get an API key. GT Metrics will run, test your page speed, and then give you suggestions for what to do. If you don't need this and you kind of already know what you need or what you want to do, you can jump straight into the settings and you can enable asynchronous JavaScript. That simply is adding a tag into the enqueued script's line of code that says async, which is telling the browser, hey, while you're loading this JavaScript file, continue on down the page and continue loading. Like, don't allow us to stop you, especially if you have a really large JavaScript. Now you can also get in here and say, are we doing for async JavaScript? Is it, as I just said, asynchronous, or are we deferring it so we're loading the JavaScript down in the footer of the HTML? That is another way to eliminate render blocking scripts, because if we defer JavaScript, there's nothing blocking it. Now, we can also, didn't need to do that. I may have just ignore the quick settings. That's what I was trying to say. Because now we can list all the scripts that we want to be async. You can list all the scripts that you want to defer. And you can list all the scripts that you want to exclude from async JavaScript, the async JavaScript plugin from touching. And we can also, you can go say, all right, you know, Loop Studio, whatever Loop Studio wants to do, just let it do. You can, or whatever Gravity Forms wants to do, you can let it do. So there's, and also themes. You can say, all right, well, the 2020 theme, we're just going to let it do what it wants to do. Basically, you have complete control. And notice how we don't have to get into the actual code. This protects us for several reasons. One, we're not messing up the WP and Q scripts function, the hook. It also allows us to, well, what if Gravity Forms updates and they start adding new scripts or something else? If we've already said, hey, you can do whatever you want, we're excluding you, we're excluding that plugin, that's fine. Or if we put certain scripts that we want to always defer, like the UI of jQuery or something, always defer to the bottom. Even if another plugin comes along and says, hey, we want to put that up top. Nope. We have the control. And then you can, they have some basic status, which is the overarching thing. And then you're basically running your GT metrics, whatever you want. Now, if you are connecting up, I believe you have X number of things for free. Basically, as long as you're not hammering recheck, you're not going to run into any limits of their API credit. So by using and going through the auto-optimize async JavaScript, those two plugins, they both work together, and then turning off all those other items, you will see an actual visible increase in speed for the load of your site. And that gets us to the point where if you have auto-optimize and you're having the JavaScript manage defer async, you eliminate all your render blocking scripts because now there's nothing blocking. But here's what I will also say. You may have sites that have to have render blocking scripts. Just because some GT metrics page speed, Y slow, some one of those metric tracking websites says, hey, you have render blocking scripts. You may actually have to have it because of how you've built the site, the tools you're using on the sites, the plugins you use. So get the site as fast as possible, and you will see that that's all you need to do. Yes, most people, if you're using a good web host, a good theme, and you're using auto-optimize, it's very, even on some of the more robust web pages, as long as you're not doing some whack-a-job image, massive image size, you will see almost every site is going to be at least in the 90s, high 80s to mid 90s, without too much extra work, without going to CDNs, without going to massive caching plugins. And once we get at that level, that's the page speed we want, because that will actually help our SEO. So it's the biggest thing I can kind of wrap this up in saying, sorry, the boat's kind of moving around. I think we have some serious power boaters really pushing some water around. So we need to analyze for the whole site, for a client site, what we've got to have happening, what we've got to be able to choose. Are we going to display something? Are we not? Are we going to use a certain plugin or are we not? Make conscious choices. Just because one site is slower than the other that's not a bad thing. The end result is we want to deliver the best experience for a client. We want that client to walk away